Hello and welcome back to the True Blue LA podcast. I'm Jacob Birch, back after a 2.5 week break to mourn the loss of the Dodgers season. With me in mourning, I think, is Eric Steven.
We're actually recording this in the evening, so yeah. But yeah, hello.
Wow. So 4 years in a row, the Dodgers have lost to the eventual champs.
They are the four-time defending
Is that speed, banner-worthy?
Speed bump champion? Yes. I think so. Why not?
4 years in a row, I was thinking about this, that arguably the quote-unquote winner of the trade deadline also losing in the World Series specifically.
Oh, all right.
Astros with Greinke, the Dodgers twice in a row with Darvish and Machado, and the Indians with the Andrew Miller trade before that. So,
man,
something to think about.
I like where your head's at there. All right.
So we're gonna talk a little bit about the World Series and just how we sort of felt kind of in reflection on watching a bunch of baseball that didn't involve the Dodgers. And then we're going to look to the offseason ahead and preview that all after this break. So you got to cover in person a lot of the World Series, right?
Yeah, for the first time, I traveled for like an actual like extensive period of time.
How many times have you seen the Astros win games in the World Series in person?
Oh,
you're hitting on a record here.
The Astros in World Series play are 5-2 with me in attendance.
Wow, that's impressive.
So I went to the middle three games in Washington D.C., which was wonderful. That was an experience. That was really fun. Like I've been to the city once before, but it was like over 20 years ago, and I got to have breakfast with my brother one of the days. He lives in Baltimore, near Baltimore. So that was cool. Yeah, it was like a fun trip. The World Series setup was like bizarre because the road team won every single game, like which never happened ever. and so that was crazy because we talked about how like the Nationals, like man, once the Nationals get past the Dodgers, like they can win it all because like they, you know, they have like the ingredients, right? Starting pitching, all this stuff, enough on offense to do whatever. Plus the Cardinals weren't as good as the Braves. So like better matchup for them. They roll through the Cardinals. They win the what?
I said not close.
Oh, right. Yeah, man. There was something weird with that, how I heard it, and I swear I thought you yelled a cuss word, which would have been just hilarious. Like, but usually I'm the one who gives an explicit
feelings.
Tag,
yeah.
And then all of a sudden Jacob's just like, but anyway. So then they win the first two games in Houston. They beat Verlander and Cole, the first time they'd lost like back-to-back games all year. Wow, the Nationals are going back home with a chance to win the title, and then they lose all three games at home. So the feeling that Sunday night, game five, was after the – plus Max Scherzer was, like, hurt, right? Like, he got scratched from Game 5. And now it's like, okay, Strasburg in Game 6, fine, but it's also against Verlander. But – and then, like, you're just hoping Scherzer is, like, healthy at all if you get to Game 7 at all. But, like, the feeling was the Astros are going to go home and win now. Like, they took care of business. Like, literally, all right. It was fun while it lasted. And then all of a sudden the Nationals went two comeback games in Houston and – just an amazing series. It was a weird, fun postseason. I liked it.
Yeah, we got a question shortly after the Dodgers had lost from Todd, I think, on Twitter, asking who should you root for? Who would you root for? And there's this weird thing where I find myself more able to root for the team that just beat the Dodgers or whatever team I'm rooting for and whatever sport I'm rooting for, maybe more so than others. But that's bit me so often. There was a time, a Super Bowl against the Carolina Panthers, where I rooted for the New England Patriots. That
Why?
Never happened
God,
again.
No,
yeah. Because it was so easy to root for Tom Brady, all of that. I'm sure the Nationals are just going to become the New Age Cardinals or Phillies, where I have all these horrible memories. But a really a city that's easy to root for, a team that was fairly easy to root for, and honestly, like. For whatever reason, that as heartbreaking as Game 5 was against the Nationals, it felt more I don't know. Unlike the Matt Stairs moment, I don't have this Howie Kendrick moment where I like seeing Howie Kendrick. He's smiling. I never want to see Matt Stairs again, ever. I just who knows why that is, but that's just how I feel about the series. Also, so, really difficult to root for the Cardinals, the Astros, or the Yankees. So
there's that, and then other than rooting for Kurt Suzuki's hat choices, there's just, we all have tough decisions to make. But I would say it's weird because you could fall into a trap, right? If there's two schools of thought. I never get the, well, I'm not watching baseball anymore because my team lost, right? Oh, the playoffs are over for me. I mean, that's,
I have some issues. I definitely took some games off just because, it was a long season. I had a lot of hope and seeing the joy of other fans that I wasn't experiencing just bummed me out. So I checked out of a few games.
I completely understand the need to decompress after the long season, but just to write off the rest of the playoffs is always weird to me. But also, let's say you all of a sudden you're like, okay, I'm going to root for the team that knocked my team out. So if you're a Dodger fan, you're like, okay, I'm going to go to the Nationals. The problem is then that team has a chance to burn you twice. Because not only did they knock out your favorite team, but all of a sudden you're rooting for them and they lose. And then you're like, oh, man, now if you're thinking about this way.
Imagine Braves fans, right? Play. Well, good job, Cardinals. Good series. You just were the better team. I think you're way better than the other teams are going for. Go get the Nationals.
Oops. They had the worst series of any team. They were obliterated in those four games. It wasn't particularly competitive. That was crazy.
Well, let's move back to the Dodgers. We're going to talk about the lawn. It's always a lawn off season, but you've been tweeting about this a lot. It's looking like it's going to be like the last couple of years, and especially lawn off season.
Yeah. But
before that, some happy news. We have you and I were arguing about this before we get on. I'm saying one final Cody Bellinger pace update.
Yep, I will go along with it, and then I will completely shift ranks if a certain thing happens before our next.
No, I think he will. This certain other award that hasn't been announced yet, I think he's going to win it, but that's not a pace anymore. The season is finished. It's okay. A Cody Bellinger accomplishment update at that point.
So my argument is, before we get into this week's pace update, is that let's say Cody Bellinger wins NL MVP. And then my argument would be the pace is that he's won one in 3 years, so now he's on a pace for six MVP awards.
Okay, all right, you might win this now.
Yeah,
I see. I like your logic.
Yeah,
but he won something.
Yep, he was a Gold Glove winner. He, as we know, he played center field in the playoffs. He started the year at first base, and now he played most of his innings at right field, and that's where he got the votes from. The Gold Glove has certain innings requirement. I forgot exactly what it was. It's something like at a certain point in the season, I want to say 120 games, you have to have something 70% of innings at a certain position or something like that. I forget what it is, but there's been a lot of multi-position type players in recent years. So I think they've relaxed it a little bit to where, as long as you played a certain number of total innings, I think you're okay at your main position or whatever. But so that was always sort of the concern with Bellinger in terms of a Gold Glove award. If he was playing a bunch, moving around a lot, but still valuable at everywhere, how do you really reward that? But he turns out he had more than enough innings in right. So he voted the Gold Glove. It was the first Dodger Gold Glove since Zach Greinke in 2015. The first position player by the Dodgers to win since Adrian Gonzalez in 2014, and the first Dodgers outfielder to win Gold Glove since 2011 when they had two, Andre Ethier and Matt Kemp in the same year. I looked this up. The Gold Glove, I think, I forgot the first year. I think it's 1956, I want to say. There's been two other Dodger right fielders to win Gold Gloves. Now, keep in mind, they didn't split the positions for the actual award until the last decade. But primary, I'm going by primary position they played that year.
Sure.
So who can you name the other two?
Did Raul win one?
He won two.
Okay.
Yeah. So 95 and 97. And can you name the other one?
No.
I'll give you a hint.
Oh.
He's been mentioned this podcast.
Wait. Still no? Now I'm confused.
Andre Ethier.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I misunderstood you. I guess I was ruling him out already.
I gotcha. That's my bad. Okay. So, in addition to Kemp, who we've mentioned, Ethier, Bellinger, and Mondesi, there are four other Dodger outfielders at any position to win a Gold Glove. Can you name them or any of them?
Say the question again.
Okay, so there's four other Dodger outfielders to win Gold Glove besides Kemp, Ethier, Bellinger, and Mondesi. Who are they?
Oh boy. Can I get some years? I'm going to ask this real quick.
Yes.
How many also won Rookie of the Year?
None.
Oh man, I'm going to run out of answers.
Okay. So the first one is Brett Butler. No.
Okay, I'm out.
So I'll just give them to you. Wally Moon, 1960. Yeah,
nope.
He played primarily left. He was known for both. He was a left-handed hitter, but he hit what they call moonshots off the very shallow right field fence at the Coliseum. But he also played.
I see what they did there.
Right, and he also played left field there. So that was like his area to shine. Willie Davis, who's like... Prime years was in the 60s, but his three Gold Gloves were in the 70s. Like, and look, if you think about it, like you had like Willie Mays and Roberto Clemente, like in the National League outfield and in their primes in the 60s. So it's understandable, like where there's basically only like one slot open every year at most.
He was up on my guest list. I'm a little upset I passed so aggressively now.
Yeah. So 1971 to 1973, he won. He's the only other than Mondesi, the only, or and Kemp won 2 years, but so multi years. And then the other, Dusty Baker, 1981,
winner,
also left field. Willie Davis was center field, by the way. Mm-hmm. The other was a center fielder and sort of I guess he was a Dodger, is in that it's Steve Finley in 2004.
Yeah, not counting that.
They picked him up at the trade deadline on July 31st.
I certainly remember that year. Would not have remembered he won a Gold Glove, and always weird to count, you know, when he spent a little bit more than half the season on another team. So.
And everyone knows you get a boost for hitting a division-winning grand slam.
Absolutely. So. That's part of good defense.
Yep.
So, yeah, I would have guessed one, and we would have erased a lot of air, so I'm happy with my pass.
Yay!
So free agency is here this used to be so exciting, like, ooh, you know, we're only a month away from the Curt Schilling deal with Boston happened in Thanksgiving. I remember this feeling of like, oh, November and December, those are the two big months where these deals are going to happen. How is my team going to shape up? And now we just have no hope of anything that exciting occurring anytime soon.
Yeah, I would say, but when you first said excited, I thought you meant like the beginning of free agency, which is the day after World Series. I'm like, really? Like, it used to be like, I always thought this was weird. Like, they've automated it now, so where like everyone who's eligible is like automatically a free agent at like 6 a.m. Pacific the day after the World Series. But like, it used to be you had to file. And like, so like your agent would have to like back something into the
Garrett
office.
Cole
like,
had some hat decisions. He thought well ahead of time, right? That night.
Yeah. What?
He wore Boris's hat, right? At the.
Oh, right. Yeah. So he had, and we'll talk about him a little later in the podcast.
Future Dodger.
Yeah. And so that was interesting. but like, yeah, so you're right. Like, the internet was around in like the late 90s, but like, it wasn't prevalent, you know, to where like we could always access it and we were constantly online. So my memories of like the hot stove was like following from afar in that, you know, I wasn't like super plugged in on the day-to-day stuff.
I want to say A-Rod's deal with Texas was the first one where I remember like reading 8 hot takes on ESPN.com or SportsIllustrated.com about. And that's what really kind of kickstarted my interest in baseball. Was that offseason, that sort of 2003 and 2004 offseason. And you mentioned Steve Finley. That trade deadline was a really, really big one for me. I was a big fan of Randy Johnson, and there was a lot of rumors he was going to go to the Dodgers. Never happened, but I remember ESPN editing the Dodgers hat on top of him. Got very excited by that. So that really launched my fandom.
So I remember, like, I would go home, you know, for like Thanksgiving, and then like watch SportsCenter, and that would be like, that's how you got your news, like, back then. And so I remember, like, the Bernie Williams, like, signing a long deal with the Yankees, like, in the late 90s and stuff. And that was just how, you're right, it was an exciting, like, time, and you're figuring out, like, what's going on. But now, like, we're so plugged in, it's like we're just waiting for moves to happen, and then who knows where they're going to happen. But so from a procedural standpoint, the free agents are free agents, like, the day after the World Series. So for the Dodgers, there were four. David Fries has already said he's retiring. Russell Martin, who hasn't officially said he's retiring, but there's been, like, speculation that he might. And then the big one, obviously, is Hyunjin Ryu. The Dodgers cannot offer him a qualifying offer this year because the new CBA says you can't have multiple qualifying offers. So the Dodgers offered him that last year, and he accepted. Now he's a free agent without any, like, draft pick compensation attached to him. So he's a more free agent than he would have been. So that's good. And then, like, Rich Hill is the other one. That was, like, the initial sort of bump. I just wanted to mention, like, you know, Russell Martin, if he retires, we don't know if he will. Not only will he go down as the best pitcher in Dodgers history, but he is 27th all-time in games caught. That's pretty good. Yeah. Like, 1,579 games caught. That's pretty crazy. So that's impressive. And then all the, like, option decisions, like, happen within 5 days after the World Series. Some are written weird where, like, they have to be decided within 3 days, but, like, the rule is they have to all be within the first 5 days. So the one for the Dodgers was Jed Jerko, who they traded for at the trade deadline, and he had a $13 million option, and no way in hell that was getting picked up. So he got a $1 million buyout, so he's a free agent too. So the other pseudo option, Kenley Jansen had the ability to opt out of his deal. He signed a 5-year deal, $80 million.
Also in this no way in hell category.
Right. And so, and it's weird because it's weird how perceptions can shift, right? Like, well, okay, I will say this. I will give myself credit, and I'm sure we probably talked about it at the time too. Kenley Jansen signed for 5 years, $80 million, 3 years ago. Aroldis Chapman signed for 5 years, $86 million with the Yankees. Both had an opt-out after the end of this year. And then at the time, it was notable in that Aroldis Chapman's deal was more front-loaded in that in those final 2 years, there was only in quotation marks, $30 million left, whereas Jansen was backloaded. So of his $80 million deal, he only got just over half in the first 3 years, $42 million. He gets $38 million the next 2 years. So, like, that's a big difference in opting out of $30 million or $38 million, especially given, like, how the reliever market has cratered, how Jansen's, like, reputation and performance have, like, relatively cratered. I don't think he would get $38 million on a 3-year deal right now. So that was an obvious no-brainer that he's in under his current contract. Aroldis Chapman, by the way, he ended up not opting out, but he used that, like, sort of like Clayton Kershaw did last year, used it as leverage, added a one year and $18 million on his deal. So he's at $348 instead of $230. So that was sort of the thing. So the reason why we keep talking about, like, well, it's going to be another long offseason. So the qualifying offer, this is sort of one indicator, is this year it's $17.8 million. There were 10 free agents that received the qualifying offer. And this is significant because it was last year it was $17.9 million. And it's gone up every single year except now. So the reason that's important is because the qualifying offer is the average of the top 125 salaries of the year before. So, like, of all the 2019 salaries for that year, the average has actually gone down in a sport that has record revenues, like revenues that keep going up year over year. and the average, the top 125 salaries are going down. And last I checked, the money isn't getting funneled to like the middle tier and lower tier players. So like, where the hell is that going? So that's a problem for like, in terms of like a market indicator. We talked about Ryu not being eligible. Yeah. And so that's kind of it in terms of like free agency. So that's sort of where the
Dodgers sort of procedural at. And sets the table for how the Dodgers are going to attack this market and maybe not attack, but evaluate their current roster. And we're going to look into that after this. Before we look at what the Dodgers are going to be looking to add to their team, maybe via free agency, maybe via trade, we should look at kind of what they have. And they have, since they got knocked out of the playoffs, a new player on the 40-man roster.
Man, look, the Dodgers just keep adding this offseason. It's going to be a huge, huge offseason of additions. And look, they've already started. Victor Gonzalez, left-handed pitcher. They added him to the 40-man. So the usual sort of way this works in that, like, so he was a prospect. He signed out of Mexico in 2012 at age 16. He's 23 now. He turns 24 in a couple weeks. Usually teams like set their roster to protect guys from the Rule 5 draft on November 20th. They'll add guys. So like last year they added Keber Ruiz, Matt Beatty, and Edwin Rios, I believe, and Josh Boers too. So this year they're going to probably add a few more, but and Gonzalez was one of those guys who needed to be added, but he also needed to be added sooner because he would have been a 7-year minor league free agent. Basically, it's not, I don't remember if it's exactly the same time as major league free agency, but it's sometime after like the season ends. So they had to add him or he would have left as a free agent. And they thought enough of him to where he could actually be like relatively useful. He had a shoulder injury and he missed like all of 2017 and like the first half of 2018. He never pitched above Great Lakes before this year. This year he pitched at three levels: Rancho, Tulsa, OKC. He put up a total 2.31 ERA in about 90 innings, 93 strikeouts, 32 walks. He was, you know, he got like his ERA got progressively worse. Like he had a 3.86 ERA in Oklahoma City, only 14 innings. But his like major league role, I think it's going to be the guy to get lefties out. Now, the new rules aren't official yet, but like the talk is that like there's going to be a 3-batter minimum for pitchers, and like, but that could also, you could bring in a new pitcher at the beginning of an inning, I believe, under that rule. So like there's still a spot for guys who can get lefties out, right? Even if it's like a specialist role. So last year, lefties hit, they were 15 for 99 against them, 152, 215 on base, 212 slugging, and a 29% strikeout rate. Righties, actually fine, like 275, 343, 379, 22% strikeout rate. So like not the worst. He wasn't getting like raked by righties, but like really good against lefties, and that's sort of what they want. So, and the current like, the way the current roster is constructed, well, obviously the lot could change, but like they basically have like Adam Kolarik, Scott Alexander, Caleb Ferguson as lefties. We don't know what like Julio Urias's role is going to be, but like that's another potential lefty. But that's it really. So adding another guy sort of helps him there. So, and again, would have been a free agent. He could be useful possibly. You know, you use a lot of guys over the course of the season, so that's why they added him basically.
So with Victor Gonzalez added, what does the Dodgers 40-man look like? Or do you want to talk about the 25-man? You want to talk about who we actually, who the Dodgers are actually committing serious money to first?
No, let's go to this. So the 40-man right now, it's at exactly 40, but that includes Yadier Alvarez and Andrew Tolles, both of whom like ended the year on Andrew Tolles started the year on the restricted list. So I'm not sure what the procedure is on that, to be honest. I forgot. I don't think they could be on the restricted list like during the offseason. Maybe they can, but not totally sure on that. But for now, it's 40 with those two. So it could be 38. Who knows? But the interesting ones to me on the 40-man are ones who are out of options, like the sort of fungible guys. Like One, Austin Barnes is out of options, but also he's like sort of penciled in as, I would say, the backup catcher unless they make other moves. So like they're not going to like just straight cut him. I think like this, you know, at least until like probably a spring training move, unless they trade him or something. Mm-hmm. But like the guys who are like on the bubble and like in terms of like if they had to make room, you have like Christopher Negron, Tyler White, Casey Sadler, Yimi Garcia, and JT Chagua. So like I think especially like with the relievers, I think Sadler's a guy you could try to sneak through waivers. The other two probably as well. But like, you know, you never know. Like they might want to bring those guys to at least a spring training, get them to try to win a job or something. But yeah, those are sort of the guys who are like, if they have to make room, they could do it. But yeah, so then now we could sort of talk about, like, what they really have for like 2020.
You are the man that many people know for maintaining this monster spreadsheet about the Dodgers salary commitments. So
like from an official standpoint, I'm no longer going to do that. Like,
I'm already sad enough about the Dodgers season.
During the season, like there's so much minutia, and like at a certain point, it doesn't really matter. Like
it matters to me, Eric.
It kind of does, but the level of like work required for like the smallest of things, the increments, whatever. I'm not gonna do it. So, but plus, I don't run True Blue LA anymore. It's out of my hands.
I just thought that would be a labor love you continued forever and ever and ever.
For no other reason than
make me happy.
I have a Google Doc that has an unofficial tracking.
Oh.
I'm no longer going to maintain the payroll worksheet on the site. There might be in some form going forward a different payroll worksheet, but I'm not gonna be the one maintaining it.
Whatever.
Yeah, but that said, I have a good idea where we're at now.
Okay. All right, so lay it out for me. Where are the Dodgers' salary obligations right now?
Okay, so current roster, there's actually 6 players under contract.
How good would this team be, just these 6 players?
Oh, wow. they'd be offensively challenged. Like, you could get through a game. If it's like a best of 3 series, you could probably sneak away with like with winning 2 games.
What if they allow like ghost runners and Justin Turner can just hit a few more times?
There's no question. The ghost runners have to happen. But like so it's Justin Turner and AJ Pollock. Those are the 2 offensive players. And like Kenley Jansen has like a pretty good career on base percentage. So Kershaw, Maeda, Jansen, and Joe Kelly. So you have the two main Dodger closing weapons in Joe Kelly and Kenley Jansen. If we want to relive NLDS Game 5, imagine.
Yeah, Joe Kelly's the main one apparently.
Like, you basically have like the Dodger bullpen from NLDS Game 5 is their pitching staff that they have under contract. Clayton Kershaw starting 8th inning, Kenta Maeda relieving him. Joe Kelly and Kenley Jansen, the 4 pitchers they use after the 7th inning. And so there it is. That's who they have under contract. Oh, wow, that's amazing. Okay. And then AJ Pollock, who I think last got hit in July, I forget. and then Justin Turner.
Good baseball player.
Exactly.
But as we know, baseball, it's not just who you have under contract. You also have plenty of arbitration eligible players. Do the Dodgers not have any? They have pre-arb players, don't they? Are we not counting them?
Well, I mean, from a functional standpoint, like not really. They're all just going to be minimum. So we don't exactly, I think, know what the minimum is going to be next year. It was $555,000. It's going to be that plus some sort of cost of living. So probably like $560,000 this year. From a baseball standpoint, that's like nothing in terms of like they're all going to be roughly the same.
Okay.
So like you could just like, but they have a ton of those, like, you know, Will Smith.
Yeah,
to name one, Gavin Lux. it's funny, like all of a sudden I clam up like I don't know who they have. So those 6 guys, they're making base salary $91.5 million this year. From a CBT CBT standpoint, like I include, there's always an estimate in there included for minor league players who are on the 40-man. It usually comes out to between like $2 and $3 million for the entire season. So I just throw that in there.
Okay.
Then there's also like every team has a, they have the exact same, like it's like goes to the player benefits, like pension fund and things like that. It usually comes out to about $15 million. So I have that in there too. So counting those two, like add-ons, those six players are put the Dodgers at $104 million for the CBT. And the threshold this year is 208. So those six players get them halfway there.
Okay.
So the players, like the things that don't count, Yasiel Sierra, who's been like injured and like not effective. He's still under contract for two more years, $5.5 million, his salary this year. And then Scott Kazmir still has $8 million deferred from an old deal. Those do not count against the CBT. In Kazmir's case, it was for a salary earned in the previous year, and that year already captured his amount. So that's why it doesn't count. For Sierra's purposes, he's not on the 40-man, so does not count. However, so where it starts to get like more expensive is that it's an unusually high number, I think, this year, especially for the Dodgers. They have 12
yeah,
players.
Yeah, no, that's why I was clarifying, is you had listed 12, and I just assumed that included pre-arb players too, and then I realized no, it doesn't. That's,
yeah,
that's remarkable.
So I was wondering about this because a couple weeks ago, I think MLB Trade Rumors released their projections for salaries for salary arb guys, and they had Julio Urias on there, and the 20 game suspension for him like threw a wrench into that. Like, so I'll say he started the year at 1 year and 123 days of service time. Usually, like the Super 2 number is like around 120, maybe a little bit higher, 2 years and 120 days. So like this year, it had Urias just had a whole year, he would have been at 2 years, 123. But then the thing is now with – you can only accrue 172 days to make a full year. There's 186 days in a season. So there's plenty of opportunity to, like, make up for lost time, like if you were optioned or whatever. But any days you accrue, like, over the 172 don't count, and you can't accrue more than that. Mm-hmm. But in Urias' case, so he was on the roster the whole year, I mean, except for the times he was suspended. So for a full year, that would be 186 days. But then if you take off the 20 that he was suspended, that's 166, which is six shy of 172. So he ended the year at two years, 117 days. And then I think Adam McAlvey was the first to report this, MLB.com Brewers reporter. The Super 2 number this year is the lowest it's ever been. 2 years, 115. So, like, that may have meant Urias qualified for a year of arbitration this year, and he'll eventually, if he goes through the normal process, get 4 years of arbitration instead of three. So it just starts the salary escalation slightly, you know, a little bit in his favor. So the other Super 2 is Cody Bellinger. He's going to be the biggest earner in this. He has just shy of 3 years. He's at 2 years, 160 days. So just going down the list, like Cody Bellinger, like MLB Trade Rumors has him earning $11.6 million. I believe Chris Bryant set the Super 2 record a couple years ago at $10.85 million. So they have him sort of breaking that. And it makes sense. Bellinger had a great year. He's had like two great years out of three. So you get why.
And the other year was pretty dang good too. So
right, it was like right, acceptable, like completely normal. And then so the biggest ones on here, like Jock Peterson, 8.5. Like he had a lot of home runs. Like I know it was the year of the home run, but like he had a good year. Corey Seager, who maybe some of us thought might be setting records at this point, like instead of being. Having the injury really cost him, I think, a lot. So his projection is $7.1 million. Kike at 5.5, Taylor at 5, Muncy at 4.6, Pedro Baez is the highest reliever at 3.3, Stripling 2.3, which seems low to me. Like he pitches a lot of innings.
Yeah, he's a horse.
Right, and so and like multiple roles. So I don't know what that is. They have Urias at 1.7 million, Austin Barnes 1.3, Yimmy 1.1. Just as a note, like I think they've negotiated Yimmy's deal. Like he wasn't ARB eligible before, but or maybe he was last year. Yeah, they use some of these guys. They'll negotiate with early and or cut them. Like, so, you know, if they don't. So, like, Yimmy's a guy who I could see where they, like, work out a deal early, and it's like, and then if they have to dump him, they dump him. But, like, Scott Alexander, $1 million. So that's 12 guys. If you add up all 12, it's $53 million. So if you add that into the previous number, the CBT number would be 157. Now, if you look at, like, there's the two players who are, like, who have, like, bonuses that were like sure to add. Kenta Maeda obviously is the first one. Last year he earned $5.4 million. He's averaged, you know, a little between 4 and 5 over his last 3 years. And those are the 3 years where he like shifted to the bullpen late. So, like, if you just sort of pencil in like $5 million for him, and then maybe $3 million for Kershaw, that he has $1 million for 24, 26, 28, and 30 starts. So just being, you know, adding those in, you're basically at $165 million. So they, if they're using the CBT as a de facto like salary cap, they have like, even if they didn't like trade anybody away, if they kept all the ARB guys, and look, and I did forget, like, so if we're at 18 players, let's say, so if you, I didn't even add this in, but if you fill the roster, the other 7 spots, let's say, you know, that'll add up to roughly $4 million. So we're at like $169 million. So they have basically like $39 million to play with in terms of like, and that's without any other moves. And so they could obviously trade guys away to create more room, and or, you know, get creative in other ways. So that's sort of where they're at the point. And obviously that changes with all sorts of moves we can talk about. And it, but yeah, I think that's where it
changes with moves, and those moves are, you know, dictated by what the Dodgers need. And I have a game you and I are going to play to fill in one of those needs that you and I agree is the Dodgers' biggest need to at least figure out. And we'll do that after this break. Guess what, Eric? I have a surprise question from Craig. No Diddy yet. We have more questions afterwards. But you and I talked before we started recording. Starting pitching is a really interesting question mark for the Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
So Craig asks us to name the top 6 2020 Dodger pitchers by innings pitched. And he wants us to do a little mini draft. And because he likes me better, I get to go first.
Yep.
So I will say Walker Buehler.
All right.
You get the next two. You get a snake. So
okay. So this is where it gets interesting. Yeah, because
I'm trying to think. I feel like the next name is pretty easy.
Well, except that if you could have went like rogue and predicted they make a move.
I could.
So have. and lock that in as your first pick and because. If the guy we're thinking about like is the guy they go for, he's clearly going to be their number one guy in innings. You know, if, all things considered, if he's healthy,
I will. But, I am going to go. I'll go on record here. I do not think the Dodgers are going to aggressively pursue to the point of signing Gerrit Cole.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on that.
You meant Rich Hill though, right?
Say what?
You meant Rich Hill. That's who you were talking about.
Yeah, no question. And also Steven Strasburg opted out, and so it's going to be interesting. But yeah, I don't see them like signing either one of those. They'll be rumored and all this. Yeah. Okay. So I will go just plain vanilla and be just a sticking in house and be super boring. And I will say Kershaw and Kenta Maeda.
And then I will say, give up and throw the table. How about this? Hyunjin Ryu.
Nice. So You predicted the first move of the podcast, and Dodgers will re-sign Hyunjin Ryu. I believe there will be trade rumors. So they put out their predictions for the free agency, and like, look, these are stabs in the dark. I think they were like between like 10% and 20% last year accuracy. So, but I think they had his contract at like 348 or something like that.
That just strikes me as such a Dodger front office contract. You know. Three to four years, kind of a lot of money, but not a ton of money. It just like that seems who this front, like what they want to do. And it'll be interesting. Like, I don't know. Do you have any sort of finger on the pulse here? Is this a front office that is ever going to make another sort of blockbuster free agent signing on a player that isn't currently on the team? Because they're clearly willing to extend their own, but they've really tried to keep things either in house or done via the trade.
Man, so before I answer that, I clicked on last year's free agent projections, and they had Ryu going for $3 and $33 million. And I was like, oh my god, that's so low. And I'm like, oh wait, I'm on the wrong thing. So no, I apologize. They have Ryu going to the Rangers this year at 3 years, $54 million.
Yeah, that's
that
still
number seems more in line of from where like his performance.
Yeah, and it still seems very to me like I had 3 years, a number that started with a 4 or 5, and that still seems very sort of in the alley of not over specifically not over committing in term. That seems to be the biggest thing this front office loves to avoid. And I think that's going to be necessarily a necessary component of a Gerrit Cole deal, and probably Strasburg. Maybe Strasburg signs for only 5, but even 5 years, this front office seems kind of unwilling to kind of commit major money to that long of a term.
So, like Strasburg, he opted out of 400. So you know he's going to look for like probably $30 million a year, and like at least 5 years. So like, yeah. And plus, he had a great postseason. He actually led the National League in innings this year. Like, if you would have pulled that, like, asked me that, I don't think I would have. It would have taken me a while to guess that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I did not think that was the case. But yeah, so like that, yeah. So I agree with you, and that's why the off seasons are generally boring. It's like, oh, you know, what are the Dodgers really going to do?
Well, let's talk about that. What do you think the Dodgers are really going to do? My thought is you've got Clayton and Buehler, very easy. Maybe they don't end up being one and two, depending on what they do. But for now, we'll say, in terms of predictability, they're the first two off the board very, very easily. And then I think you're going to find, I think what's really interesting to me, and I did a lot of thinking about this kind of during the rest of the playoffs, quite frankly, is how many rookies, or almost rookies, if we count Urias, are they willing to put in this, go into the season saying, that's our 3, 4, and 5?
Right, so of the guys, like Urias has the most ability, or like I think has the best chance of being like the guy they quote unquote give a runway to, like they talk about, you know, in terms of like just taking over a rotation spot. But it's like one of those things.
Do you think they only have one of those?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
I mean, maybe. I mean, I don't know. Like, it wouldn't like so. Well, I don't want to give away my – because I still have another pick. Like, you have two. You have two
fair.
Picks.
That's fair.
You should pick yours. So
Urias was my next one. So.
Okay, I was just saying it will inform my pick. So you have two picks. So Urias and who else?
I said Ryu.
You did?
I did.
Okay. So this is the
I think they're going to go after a 3 to maybe 4, but – preferably 3-year pitcher they can get for a 3-year term. And I think not only because of comfort and fit and familiarity, but just because he's probably the best pitcher that fits that mold, it's going to be Hyunjin Ryu, and that's going to fill that spot.
You make good points. Zach Wheeler is like the third rated pitcher on this list for a free agency. And so that's interesting. They have him signing a 5-year deal for $100 million with the Phillies. That seems like a little pricey, but like whatever, it might work. Madison Bumgarner's next, and then it gets Ryu would be the next one after that. Okay, so before we get to that, like my last pick, I will say Ross Stripling.
Okay,
just because he's going to figure out a way to get 100 innings somehow.
Yeah.
And so, like, yeah. So I think what I was thinking of picking there, since you picked Ryu, I was going to go with Rich Hill. But then thought was they bring him back for a one-year deal and then just get what they get out of him. But then at the same time, I was thinking, even if they bring him back, he could, like, go through stretches where he's not healthy again. And so are you really getting 100 innings out of Rich Hill at this point? It's going to be a one-year deal, whatever they do, if he comes back. So, like, that's why I didn't pick him. So that's why I went with Stripling. It's a very boring draft from my standpoint.
I mentioned this before, but I think it'll be interesting. Let's say some team goes for 5 years for Hyunjin Ryu. I don't see that happening, but let's say that happens, and the Dodgers say no thanks. It'll be at that point. Do they try to bargain hunt on a free agent again? Do they make a deal, or they just say Urias and May, you're our 4 and 5. Go at it. If things go to hell, we have to make a trade or just plug Stripling in. It feels like that's not a way to win a championship for a fan base that desperately wants one. Who knows? Maybe it'll be a thing they do. And I don't know. Do they want Dustin May in AAA all year?
Right. And the other thing is, like, it depends what they do on offense. Like, sure. what if their big move is, like, upgrading the offense, and you go with the volume of pitchers and not necessarily a really strong third pitcher? It's a rough call, and then you just figure out what you do during the season. I'm not saying that's the best way to do it, but maybe that's a thought. They're going to be linked to all the big names, right? Like, they're going to be linked. Like, this is the most they've sort of had to play with in terms of, like, when they actually had a budget, in these few years. So, like, they could actually do something. Like, if they wanted to, they could legitimately, like, just add Gerrit Cole. They could just sign Gerrit Cole and afford him, because every team can afford him. And if your team says they can't afford him, they're lying. But, like, from a practical standpoint, like, even from a baseball, like, fuddy-duddy, like, oh, man, we need more public money standpoint, like, the Dodgers can afford Gerrit Cole. So, like, whether they do it, remains to be seen. But, like, the money's there. They actually have flexibility to do something. They're going to be linked to Rendon. I think Rendon is more likely to just re-sign with the Nationals. It seems like they're pretty aggressive. However, some of the rumored deals, I guess, I think a lot of the numbers that have been out there, like 7 years, 210, which is basically what they gave Scherzer, but also I think a lot of it's going to be deferred, so it's probably more like 7, 185 or 190, depending on the deferrals. So, maybe that's where the Dodgers swoop in with, like, some weird deal where it's, like, 4 years, 160.
That was something, like, I was going to say. That these kind of hyper-aggressive 2-3-year deals at a really, really high AAV have been leaked to the press so aggressively the last 2 years with the Dodgers, but they've never actually gotten one. They've just said, if you wanted to do this, you could do this and prove yourself deal and go back and get another long-term deal afterwards. It'll be interesting to see if that ever actually happens.
Right, and I think that's where you sort of play with your flexibility a little bit, if that's their goal. But also, like, so the two big names, right, that they've been sort of linked to, whether it's, like, wish posting or actual, like, concrete rumors, are Rendon and Francisco Lindor. Both involve, like, other moves that absolutely have to be made. So, like, so if they get Rendon, right, Last I checked, one of the guys they have under contract, one of the best hitters, like, in baseball the last decade.
The leader, the man who has a day named after him by the city.
Right. A guy who, by the way, hasn't disappeared in the playoffs when he's healthy. So, like guy you actually want. So, that would require, like, Justin Turner, who is in the final year of his contract, having to move positions. I would imagine probably he'd play first in this scenario, and then it means Max Muncy is basically your second baseman, and so that means you're trading Seager for, like, pitching, or
I bought Lux, a Corey Seager jersey on the last homestand, so
or like
maybe
Lux
I did the curse.
Or like Lux is moving to left field and you include, like, look, they also have Alex Verdugo, like, coming back, like, presuming, like, he's going to be healthy. Do you, is this the year they finally, with all, like, Jock is always rumored in trades. He actually had a really, really good year. Do they strike while the iron's hot and use him in a trade, like, somehow? Not, whether as a main piece or as a very high-end, like, throw-in. There's also, like, let's get to the Lindor thing for a second. Lindor's only, like, a rumor because the Indians are weird in that, like, they've been, like, so they had the, you know, they won the division, what, 3 years in a row, and then they're, like, last year they're, like, well, there was all these rumors, like, they're going to dump at least one of their pitchers, and they didn't really do much offensively. They traded away Yandy Diaz, who ended up being really useful for the Rays, and, like, they ended up not making the playoffs and losing out even on a wild card spot. So, like, I wonder if they just think, like, our roster is really good. We're not going to probably sign Lindor, so get what we can get. So any sort of Lindor deal, it's going to obviously include prospects. But then also, like, what do you – you probably have to deal Seager in that move and then, like, headline it with other prospects too. So that's a weird deal. You'd obviously upgrade – I think you're upgrading probably both ways with Lindor. He's definitely better defensively. Are we going to see the Corey Seager of old again offensively? I don't know. Like, still a doubles machine, but not as all-around of a player as Lindor. So that's a thing. He's also a switch hitter. So that provides a little more flexibility. The other option, and I don't even know what the deal with this is the Red Sox, who are, like, seem hell-bent on getting under the cap. They had the highest payroll this year. They had the highest payroll last year. They had the highest payroll this year. I think right around about $239 million both times. So, like, they were in, like, the double penalty where you not only pay the tax, but also you drop 10 spots in the draft, your first pick. So, you know, their new ownership group is like, you know, it's not a guideline, or it's not a mandate, it's a guideline, you know, which means, oh, my God, we have to get under this. And so the weird thing is, and, like, so it puts them in this weird spot of, like J.D. Martinez, like, opted back into his contract. He had 3 years, $62.5 million left. And, like, it's one of those things, do you think, like they almost – I wrote about this on SB Nation today. I think it's one of those where they won't come out and say it, but, like, I wonder if they would have been better off if he opted out from their standpoint. Like, it's obviously good from a baseball standpoint to get one of the better hitters, like, in the American League back, and it makes your team better. But they're like, oh, man. So now it's like Mookie Betts is going to be a free agent at the end of the year. Do they try to get a huge haul for him? But then, like, man, you bring in a new, like, general manager, or I guess chief baseball officer, Chaim Bloom from the Rays. Like, hey, congratulations. Your first order of business is to be the most hated guy in Boston by trading away Mookie Betts. Now, like, I think the more practical thing is they might try to trade J.D. Martinez. But I think that's going to be tough, too, because the market for him is essentially AL. Look, NL teams could definitely use him and put him in the outfield if they had to. But, like, there's a lot of teams that aren't trying. And, like, I think there's just very few teams that need a DH. And I think that's probably why he didn't opt out, because his free agent market was going to be impacted like that. So who's really going to trade for him? So I think that's where they're in this spot where if they really are stuck of we have to get under the cap, the one big way they do it is by getting rid of Mookie Betts or some weird deal where they – Ken Rosenthal even suggested that they, like, try to dump David Price or Nathan Eovaldi and include, like, Andrew Benintendi to sweeten the deal. Like, it's like, that's crazy talk to me. Like, so, but if you want to swoop in and, like, do a move like that to, like, you know, take advantage of your, you know, financial flexibility or whatever, or maybe but the Dodgers are in the same boat, although they're in a better position relative to the CBT. So it's weird. This offseason is going to be very odd. So I think there's those type of opportunities out there, but those are, like, the big names. But they all, for the Dodgers, like, they all require, like, making other moves, right? Like, they could just slot, like, Mookie Betts in and then figure they could trade Jock or something for pitching, and that would be relatively seamless. But, like, the other ones, you're either moving Turner, trading Seager, possibly trading Lux or both or whatever, moving Lux to the outfield maybe. And like, so this is a weird, it's a weird like combo. But like, this is where the flexibility sort of comes into play. We like, they still have Chris Taylor and Kike to where if they don't do any moves, like one of those could play second if Lux doesn't play second, or those are the two like right-handed outfield complements to Peterson or Verdugo, with presumably Pollock is still going to be in left, at least for a majority of the time. So it's a very, I can't say I know what the Dodgers can do. But that said, with the flexibility, I think they are going to like swing big this year, yeah, whether that means signing a free agent or making one of these like big trades.
So I have a question for you before we move on to some key dates.
Yeah.
Will Alex Verdugo, Gavin Lux, and Corey Seager all be on the Dodgers 40-man roster on opening day?
Say the two names again. Will Smith, Verdugo, and Lux?
No. I can't imagine Will Smith being traded. Maybe. Who knows? Gavin Lux,
mm-hmm,
Corey Seager,
mm-hmm,
Alex Verdugo.
No.
Okay. You heard it here first. Breaking news.
Yeah. Yep.
You know everything. Key sources.
Yeah.
Unnamed sources.
Yep. I would say before we get into the key dates, I have a little game for you.
Okay.
So I'm not counting adding Victor Gonzalez to the 40-man.
I am.
Because that's like an internal move, and it's more of the Rule 5 move. And I didn't include those in previous years. But
oh, okay.
I want to have a game. We could both talk about how many transactions the Dodgers are going to have involving the 40-man between now and the start of spring training. So my question to you, the last two off seasons,
mm-hmm,
so it's two answers. How many total moves did the Dodgers do? So it's a different number for each year. So last year first, how many do you think?
Are we going to play clock game?
What?
You have to say higher or lower.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
clock game,
fine.
Clock game, okay. 16.
That's Card Sharks, by the way.
It's clock game from Price is Right. Come on, man. You were sick. Anyway. You watched Price is Right.
Okay, Card Sharks. Is,
research. Six, this Card is Sharks for is so this is for last year. 16.
Lower.
12.
Lower.
5.
Higher.
8.
Right on the money. Okay.
Oh, look at that.
So I even sort of cheated a little because I included Ryu accepting the qualifying offer.
Yeah, that's
although cheating. That's not really cheating. 7. Anyway, so it's 8. So I think the year before, how many do you think it was?
16.
No, it was no.
12.
Lower.
8.
No. 4. Higher.
Oh, it's higher than 8. 9.
Yeah, it's 9.
See,
I cheated
a little bit because I really, really liked Clock Game as a kid. So
the 2017-18 offseason, the first two moves were trading Josh Raven to Atlanta and losing Grant Dayton on waivers to Atlanta.
That's why like I say start with 16 because I'm like, man, there's probably so many of those moves that I just forget.
Here, I want to just read to you. Okay, so the big move was the Matt Kemp trade. Sure. The first Matt Kemp trade. Each of these offseasons had a Matt Kemp trade. This was where they reacquired him. But yeah, so the other moves, Raven, Grant Dayton, signing Tom Kohler, claiming Henry Owens on waivers.
Dodger legend.
Trading for Dylan Baker. getting Scott Alexander in a three-way trade.
Okay.
Signing Chase Utley. He's still around. And then this one I included, even though it technically happened, I think it happened before spring training games, but it was JT Chargois waiver claim. But so last year, though, so after Ryu, the next two moves were earth-shattering. They traded Tim LeCastro to the Yankees. He ended up on the D-backs. They traded for Adam McCreary, legend. The Matt Kemp trade, again. the Yasiel Puig, Matt Kemp, Alex Wood trade.
Yeah.
Signing Joe Kelly, which will obviously go down in lower. Great move in Dodger history. Trading for Jamie Schultz. Trading for Russell Martin. That was the surprise comeback. And then signing AJ Pollock. Yeah. So it hasn't been exciting in these last 2 years. So that's why we're just hoping for anything to happen. Like, yeah, exactly.
All right, we got to take one. This is a long one. It's going to be maybe a record episode.
Yeah, that's what she said. Yeah.
Another break. Go over some key offseason dates. You have a Dodgers rewind. I have four more questions from Craig all after this. Okay, I know you have a Dodgers rewind for us, but I want to make sure at the very end of this hour plus long episode that our listeners have key dates for the this should have been our teaser the whole time.
Yeah, like that should be the title. Is that the key dates? okay, so the off season. Look, I don't even know why I'm including this first one, but the GM meetings are next week in Scottsdale.
This happens every, like, you either bring it up or I see it get tweeted, and like I always do that thing where I'm like, ooh, winter meetings. It's early this year, and I go, oh right, this is the completely.
It's like, total procedural stuff, but people still cover it. Like
now and then, like an interesting rule change sometimes gets brought up.
Hardly ever any deals. The teams are still sort of working out their things. Some teams are still hiring front office people. Like, so it's like a weird.
I want to ask you about that. A year ago, a little less than a year ago, when Farinzaidi went to the Giants, I asked you, well, can the Dodgers just proceed without a GM? And you said no. No. They're gonna hire a new one. That never happened, Eric. Is that ever gonna happen?
And it doesn't. I don't think they're gonna sign. Okay. They're not gonna have a GM this year either.
Okay.
So it's basically Friedman running the show, and they have other like lieutenants. And
sure,
stuff in
sure.
There.
It just I guess when we talked about it the first time, it wasn't just you. It seemed like they wanted to have one more sort of figurehead voice in the room, and I guess they don't need it.
Right. So GM meeting, super fun. So for next week, and I'm sure this is probably what we're going to end up talking about on our next podcast, is award season. So it already sort of started with the Gold Gloves. They already announced the Baseball Writers Association finalists. And finalists is a weird word because there's no new vote. It's just the top three finishers for each award. So on November 13th, the Cy Young Awards are announced. Hyunjin Ryu is one of the top three in the NL, along with Jacob deGrom, who's probably going to win, and Max Scherzer. So we'll find out then. November 14th, the more likely possibility for a Dodger to win is the MVP award. Cody Bellinger is a finalist. I will talk more because it would be pretty historic. Rare. For a position player to win the MVP as a Dodger. We'll talk more about that if he wins. But then the other big date we talked about with Victor Gonzalez, November 20th, deadline to set rosters for the Rule 5 draft. This is when they add, players who would need to be protected from the Rule 5 draft. So they add some of the prospects on there. This was like Gavin Lux. Will Smith would have been added this offseason had they not joined the Dodgers during the season. Then the big one is December 9th through the 12th. Winter meetings are in San Diego this year. I don't think I'm going. Even though it's close, honestly, there's not a ton going on. I might go. I haven't really. It's more like logistical thing. I haven't figured out what I'm going to do for SB Nation.
What if
there.
I bought you Hodad's, yeah. One meal at Hodad's on the house.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously. Okay. The Rule 5 draft is during the winter meetings. It's on the last day. So, I mean, I like it from a fun, quirky thing, but it doesn't really matter. It doesn't, who cares? So the other thing is January 10th. That's the arbitration exchange date. So the Dodgers have 12 guys. So by then, they will either have a deal or go to a trial. That's how the Dodgers operated.
Did their streak get broken?
No, they haven't gone to a trial yet.
In forever, right?
Yeah, since I think Joe Bimal was the last one.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's kind of it. So it's officially off season. I did a little baseball decompress for a week. I was off for about 5 days after the World Series. So I'm ready now. Hallmark Christmas movies are on. College basketball started. NBA started. League's looking good. And football exists. So, yeah.
You know what we don't have an offseason on is the Dodgers Rewind.
Yay. I would imagine that we skip Dodger Rewind a lot during the season, but I think during the offseason, we're going to hit more of these.
We're
going
to need to, especially if it's as slow as last year. Oh, my goodness.
We need to fill time.
December and January was rough. So what the hell are we going to talk about?
So this one, it sucks why we're doing this one. It's because he passed away. Ron Fairley, he died on October 30th. He actually lived out in Palm Desert, I believe. So he was local. He went to Jordan High in Long Beach, went to USC. This was pre-draft. So the Dodgers, signed him in the 50s. He debuted in 1958, their first year in L.A. So he's, L.A. through and through in terms of, his sort of baseball career. He played 12 years. The Dodgers' first 12 years in L.A., he wasn't really a regular until, 1961. But, yeah, so he was 20 years, 59 days old in 1958. Can you name how many Dodgers – debuted at a younger age since Ron Fairley?
Okay, so what's my target age here?
20 years, 59 days.
Okay. Four.
Higher. Eight. Everything's higher.
12.
It is 12.
See? Just gotta go force.
Edwin Jackson, debuted on his 20th birthday, 2003, against Randy Johnson. Everyone else was before 20. Willie Crawford was the youngest at 18 years.
Yeah, that is legitimately a good amount higher than I would have thought. I mean, I guess I don't have a real relation for it. It happens a little less. Does it happen less often now? That's my impression. But maybe I'm just wrong.
Kind of, yes. I think they happen in weird spurts. So the Dodgers had it happen a lot in the 60s. In fact, six times in the 60s after Fairley in 58. Joe Mohler, Dick Kalmus, Darryl Griffith, Willie Crawford, Bobby Valentine, who was, man, injuries really screwed his career. He was really, of all those 1968 draft picks, he was thought of to be the best. And he ended up, being a very successful manager, but not, because of injuries. Bill Buckner also before 20. Fernando Valenzuela, just a couple months shy of his 20th birthday. Gil Reyes, catcher. Side note with him, he debuted in 1983. I believe this is the case. He would have been, so in the 1988 World Series, Mike Socia, I think he hurt his knee. I forgot what he injured. But Rick Dempsey caught game five. And I think the story was, Josh Sushan had this in his book, I think the deal was, had the series went back to L.A., the Dodgers would have had to, bench Socia, off the roster, and they would have had Gil Reyes replace him, on the roster. So, but it didn't happen because they won in game five. But, yeah, Kareem Garcia, and then the other two are a little more famous. Adrian Beltre, might have heard of him, and Julio Urias. Yeah. So, yeah, so it's a good list. It's a fun little list. But, just looking from a, sort of macro or, higher view from Fairley, from 1961 to 66, he averaged 2.5 war. He played mostly right field and first base, sort of a mix. Different years, he was at different positions. His best year was 65, 3.7 war. He had 110 OPS plus in his 12 years with LA. His career OPS plus was 117 in 21 years. He played all over, actually, and he had 1,913 hits a lot. I would say this. So I looked up an old thing. This is from the 1968 Dodgers yearbook. I'm just going to read you this whole quote. This is great. This is one of those where it's clearly written by a team PR person, the way it sort of comes off. But this is the quote. For a guy with a lifetime batting average of .272, a consistent RBI count averaging about 70 per year, and a classic batting stroke, the collapse of his batting average all the way to .220 is just one of those things you don't try to explain. And then, There was only one real highlight in Ron's season. He had the honor of hitting the first Dodger homer of the year in late April against the Cards. I looked this up. Late April.
Yeah.
Hit the first Dodger homer of the season. Wait, what? So that caught my eye. So he hit it on April 23rd against Joe Horner. That was the Dodgers' ninth game.
cool.
So in the live ball era, they've only had a streak of no home runs, one streak longer than that to start a year. Can you guess the year? I'll give you a hint. It's in the same decade.
No.
All right. It was 1963.
I'm done playing your games.
Okay.
twice as long as I've been alive.
You would have said a number out of it. Lower.
Yeah. Earlier. All right. You just wanted to play Cocktail Whip. I appreciate that.
It's a fun game. Yeah. I respect Price is Right / Card Sharks. Fairly was in like the golden era, like in terms of like Dodgers in LA, especially. He played in four World Series. He was a regular in 65, as I said. So his 1965 series, like Koufax ended up winning the MVP and rightfully so. He won. He pitched shutouts in game 5 and game 7, the last one on 2 days rest. So pretty crazy. But had Koufax not won it, like Fairley was like in line for MVP. He was 11 for 29. He hit two home runs, six RBIs, and scored 7 runs. He had a 2-run single in game 4 that sort of broke open the game. That was the Dodgers' first that helped them tie the series. He scored 1 run in all 7 games. He's the only player ever to score a run in all 7 World Series games in 1 year. Like, not just with the Dodgers, any team. Nobody's ever done it except Ron Fairley. His 7 total runs in the series tied a Dodgers World Series record. Can you name the 2 players he's tied with?
Oh, Lord. Jackie Robinson.
No. I will give you a hint. They're both are in the 70s.
Ron Say.
Nope.
Steve Garvey.
Nope. Reggie Smith and Davey Lopes.
Thank you. I was going to keep naming infield, baby. I was going to get to one of them eventually.
Ron Fairley had 11 hits. That ties a Dodgers World Series record. Can you name the 2 people?
I'm done. You just tell me. I have a revenge, by the way. We have a question coming up, and I'm going to get my revenge. Make you look good. Like the idiot.
It's no question. Maury Wills, 1965. And Bill Russell, next to me.
Making Jacob play the name 1960s Dodgers game is just really cool.
So Ron Fairley, right? Like, yeah. He had a full baseball life, man. Like, so the Dodgers, when they traded him, they traded him with an infielder named Paul Popovich, which is a great name. June of 1969. So we hadn't even landed on the moon yet, and they made this trade. All they got back in return was the return of Maury Wills for his second stint with the Dodgers. And Manny Mota.
Hey.
And he was basically with the Dodgers forever since. So so Fairley, he had the distinction of not only playing with the Expos in their first year, he made an all-star team with them in 1973, but he also played with the Blue Jays in their first year in 1977, and he made an all-star team with them.
That's awesome.
So, yeah. So, like,
Mr. Canada.
And then, like, so basically, almost right after he was done playing, he started announcing Angels games. 1979. Then he moved on to the Giants at some point in the 80s. And then I forgot the exact year. I think I want to say 93. He started calling Mariners games. So 27 years he was a broadcaster from 1979 to 2006. At a few times, I think after like Dave Niehaus died, he stepped in and called a few games for them, for the Mariners. And he was sort of off and on, like occasionally go back for a series or something. But man, that's like 50 plus years
that's
in
a baseball life. Yeah.
Yeah. That's beautiful. And so guys like him should be celebrated. So
absolutely.
Rest in peace, Ron Fairley. That's our Dodgers rewind.
Well, we have one more segment. We're going to make this a quick one. I'm going to blister through these. We're already something like 8 hours over, but it's time for
questions from Craig.
You know, I keep timestamps in this little notebook next to me, and I'm not used to writing as many numbers as I'm writing. So I've got a trivia question. This is my revenge from Craig. I appreciate this, Craig, to make you look like an idiot, making me answer all these stupid Dodger trivia questions. can you name? The decade's over. Did you know this, Harry? Decades over.
Yeah, the 2010s.
I don't want to hear from these. The decades actually won the zero troofers. Decades done. Right. The numbers that start with one are done. Can you name the top four players in Major League Baseball, both leagues, not just the Dodgers, which you thought earlier, to lead in hits, the four highest hit collectors in the decade.
So the players who had the most hits over the 10 years.
Yes.
Okay.
Between 2010 and 2019, all hit over 1,600. I have a hint for you if you need it.
I'm not going to use the hint yet.
Okay. I'll let you know. I tried this at home. I horrifically butchered this question.
Okay. So I know he's been at times below replacement level in the last couple years. But he's played except for the 1 year. He's basically played every day. Mm-hmm. So I have to say Albert Pujols. Don't tell me if I'm wrong or right until I name four. Albert Pujols. Now my instinct is to also guess Miguel Cabrera. But he missed more time because of injury. So, I'm really not sure here. I think I'm just going to name him. I'm going to say Miguel Cabrera.
Okay.
Then I'm also going to say, even though he retired technically this year, Ichiro.
Okay. So are you done?
No, I named three.
Oh, okay.
And I'm mostly stalling, but I'm just trying to think here. Just guys who played like 10 years, the last 10 years or like probably most of them. Who were the guys at like the 2013 All-Star game? That's kind of what I'm like zoning in on.
I'm gonna give you one hint. you might not want to do that.
Yeah. Okay. I was gonna say. All right. Honestly, I don't. I will need that hint now. I'm only at three.
All four played in both leagues for multiple teams, obviously.
Okay. So that gives me high hopes that Pujols is correct, but not Cabrera.
We're playing for both teams. Both.
That's true. Yeah. Okay. My other guess was Ichiro, and he did
also
play for both leagues. So. Yay! I'm going to assume I'm 3-3.
So I had the hint. Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
Wait, what?
Go ahead. No, you finish. You tell me when you're done guessing.
I'm in. Oh. Okay. I do want to guess a fourth player. 2019. Dang it. Okay. You're a jerk.
Five.
Oh, too soon.
Four, three, two, one.
Buster Posey.
Okay. So I also guess Ichiro, Pujols.
Oh, it's probably Joey Votto. No, he did play both leagues. Okay, never mind.
Joey Votto was my first guess, and then so Robinson Cano.
Of course, yeah.
And Nick Markakis.
Okay.
Yeah, Adam Jones.
Oh,
and Starlin Castro.
Wow. Oh,
yep.
Okay.
It's like, wow. Right. That would have taken me a lot of guesses to get those names. So
Starlin Castro, a free agent, by the way. The Marlins declined his option. Yeah, but pretty much.
Next question is for me. Off-season music talk. He wants to know my five song playlist to listen to when you're working. I'm going to go albums because I like a consistent sound. I either just put on lo-fi hip-hop beats or whatever playlist is going on that kind of does that. Try to avoid lyrics generally, or very noticeable lyrics as much as I can. An exception to that is the artist Blood Orange. Really anything by him is amazing, really focusy for me. And then I listen to a lot of video game soundtracks. Of the two I will recommend are the Celeste soundtrack and the Hollow Knight soundtrack.
I like Blood Orange in a seltzer. That's not a lot of it.
You started that sentence and I actually took you for your word. I'm like, that strikes me. It's an unusual thing for you to like. So
yeah, I have no idea who the person you mentioned is.
Cody Bellinger was the first Dodger position player to win a Gold Glove since Adrian Gonzalez in 2014. Who will be the next Dodger position player to win a Gold Glove?
I almost want to cheat on this and say Cody Bellinger at in center field or like at first base or something. But like I'm just gonna say it'd be cool if I'm right. I'll say Francisco Lindor.
Gavin Lux. I saw a few ice cream cakes in the grocery store case the other day. I remember buying them for birthdays from Baskin and Robbins. Are you two a fan of the combined cake and ice cream concoction?
Mm-hmm.
And like he goes on to go into details, but I can stop there because no, they are an abomination.
Yeah. Like,
you know what I love? I love ice cream. I love cake. I like them on the same plate. This combination, like you are removing the greatest element of cake and doing so by giving me sort of subpar ice cream. It's awful.
Craig needed a two word with a hyphen in there or a slash and or in the middle there, because you can have cake or ice cream or cake and ice cream, but you cannot have ice cream cake.
Yep.
Like you just can't do it. But yeah, so there.
Whew. Hour breaking in after we edit down, I'll probably be hour and 20 minutes or so. So
this is one of our longer episodes.
Yeah. Thanks for bearing with us as we kind of get our sea legs back. We will be doing largely every other week, I think, is what we're planning on. If there's some exciting breaking news coming out, we might fill in and do a weekly episode.
Yeah.
Largely, kind of keep that up until we get in earnest back in April when the games really start playing.
We'll break in and do a podcast on the rumored like 2-year $93 million offer the Dodgers made to Gerrit Cole. Ooh. That'll never actually happen. So yeah.
One year, $100 million.
Yeah.
Who says
maybe not. But it's really like it's 4 years, $100 million with $95 million paid in year one. And a player and option after year one, so like it's $25 million against the cap, but like, yeah, I don't know what they're gonna do. But anyway, So I think next episode we're gonna talk a lot about how the Dodgers did in the awards with Ryu and Bellinger, and we after my stellar performance in that trivia question of the 2010s, we're gonna zone in on the Dodgers in the 2010s. And talk about probably either their team and or like who did the best in certain categories and see if there's any surprises like these. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we will talk to you then.